I wanted to share with you tonight some of the Buddha's teachings on peace and putting it in the context of our contemporary crazy world. If you weren't here, a few weeks ago I gave a talk that's in Dharma Seed. By the way, each of the talks are recorded and they're posted on Dharma Seed weekly talks. Whether or not you're here, you can hear what's going on. And the same for the teachers who come while I'm away. The guest teachers are recorded as well. But I gave a talk a few weeks ago called Hatred Never Ceases by Hatred. Gave another version of it a couple of days ago at the retreat. And then I gave another talk the week after on conscientious compassion. And was exploring for myself as well as whoever wants to hear, just the reactions that can so easily get activated, evoked, when we're reading the news these days. The first one was right after Charlottesville. And then, well, what can I say? Every day there's something new. And so I've been wanting to look at this for my own sake, as well as sharing it with others, just how to hold what goes on in the news in a wise way without adding to the hatred out there with more hatred or with more ill will. And I just use that one line for the talk from the Buddha, the famous line, hatred never ceases by hatred. Hatred only ceases by love. This is an ancient and eternal law. But tonight what I thought I'd do is share with you not just my words and my thoughts, but the Buddha's words about peace and putting it in the context of, well, what is this that we're being called to wisely respond to? How can we wisely respond while still having a deep caring for the world? Surely it's more than just settling back and saying, okay, I'll be peaceful and just let everything happen. There's a kind of tension there between caring so much and yet not adding to the field with more anger and ill will. And we've been exploring that and want to continue to explore that because it's still on my mind and in my heart. But I thought that just sharing the Buddha's words, we can go to a source that inspires, I would think, most, if not all of us, and then explore together. And I want to acknowledge that I have a collection, this collection of excerpts of the Buddha's words on peace that was put together by Gil Fronsdell, who's a good friend and colleague and a wonderful Dharma teacher and a scholar, a Buddhist scholar, as well as a really special Dharma teacher. Gil has a community, a sangha down in Redwood City, if you're ever down there, and he has lots of amazing things going on down there. He also has a retreat center down there, the Insight Retreat Center in, I think it's Scotts Valley as well. But he put this collection together of a number of different passages of the Buddha on the subject of peace, and so I want to give him some credit. So, first to keep in mind that the spirit of the peaceful warrior, I'll call it, is based on on sila, on the precepts, on the power of not causing harm, which is the foundation for inner peace in that spirit of harmlessness, that when you are not causing harm to others, there is a sense of ease and spaciousness and what the Buddha called the bliss of blamelessness. And first, some thoughts about this spirit of harmlessness. If the well-adorned, that is, if you're, even if you're a householder and have jewelry and, you know, you're not living a monastic life, one lives at peace, calmed, controlled, assured, and chaste, which is another way of saying a pure heart, having given up violence toward all beings, then one is a Brahmin, a renunciate, a monastic, even though you are well adorned, that you are a Brahmin, you are a holy person, someone who lives the holy life, if you are committed to peace. One is not an elder just by having gray hair. That's a good line. One is not an elder just by having gray hair. Someone ripe only in years is called an old fool. The Buddha didn't pull punches, you know. But it's because of having truth, dharma, harmlessness, restraint, and self-control that the wise one, purged of impurities, is called an elder. Pretty good, huh? You don't have to wait for your chronological advanced age to be living that and be called a wise one. But there's something about actually growing in age. It just often seems to come, not always, but often in the hard wiring as your intensity mellows out a bit more and things don't quite activate you as much. I can't make a blanket statement on that. I'm sure you still get activated by things, but even if you're older. But as you're older, there's just a wider perspective in you. You have often a more sensitivity to life. Having given up violence towards beings both timid and strong, whoever neither kills or causes others to kill, I call a Brahmin. And then he talks about reasons for nonviolence, some other reasons. I'll just read this passage. Monks, and that is both monks and nuns. A wise person, one of great wisdom, does not intend harm to self, intend harm to others, or intend harm to both self and others. Thinking in this way, such a one intends benefit for self, benefit for others, benefit for both, benefit for the whole world. Thus is one wise and of great wisdom. I wanted to read that particular passage. It's good to keep in mind where he says, a wise one, one of great wisdom, does not intend harm to self, as well as not intend harm to others. So this is broadening our understanding of being peaceful. This is advanced peace, where you do not harm yourself, where you do not talk to yourself in unskillful ways. This is not to make you feel guilty if you do, or put pressure on yourself if you do, but the Buddha is saying, watch how you talk to yourself. Watch how you treat yourself. Watch how you care for yourself. And don't harm yourself. Because if you harm yourself, you will likely feel small and contracted and be at war with yourself. And that, of course, naturally spills over to how you can be with other people. And those that do harm others, I believe if you look deeply enough, there's a part inside that they're not at peace with themselves, that they're having some kind of battle of not being enough, or needing to be higher than. And so they are unskillful in others to put them down. Why would you need to put them down if you already felt at ease and peace with yourself? So you might keep that in mind when you see people who are doing unskillful things in power, who somehow are not at peace with themselves inside. This is a cause, instead of ill will, a cause for compassion. If you can go deeper and see, oh, they must not like themselves very much, even if they're braggadocio, because that's what insecurity gives rise to. Then he talks about how being a person of peace is born out of empathy and concern for others. And this is a famous passage. All tremble at violence. All tremble at violence. All fear death. Having likened others to yourself, don't kill or cause others to kill. All tremble at violence. Life is dear to all. Having likened others to yourself, don't kill or cause others to kill. Very simple. If you can get in touch with the fact that you don't want harm or violence to happen to you, even though you might inflict it on yourself out of unskillful relationship, but very few people, unless you have some kind of masochistic tendencies, very few people want violence to happen to them. Most of us would say, no, I don't want to be harmed. And he says, just take a look at how that feels. And then see that you're not different from others around you. And this is, I think, the great secret of compassion. And that is to just put yourself in someone else's shoes. It's so simple. I mean, it doesn't get more basic than that. As the Golden Rule says, do unto others as you would have others do unto you. But to actually do that, especially when you're ready to just really lay into someone for what they've done, and we've talked about this a number of times, when you understand somebody else's reality, even if it's bizarre, even if it's cruel, even if it is dangerous, it's not to excuse it. And you want to be really strong in your not causing harm and in preventing others from causing harm. But the secret is to try to imagine what another's reality is. As I love the Dalai Lama's teaching, maybe I said it here a couple of weeks ago, if I did, pardon the redundancy, where he says, if somebody is causing you suffering or is upsetting you, understand that it's probably not that they want to hurt you or upset you. More likely, it's that their internal reality is intersecting with your internal reality in a way that is not matching your expectations. And now, there are some people that do want to hurt out of anger, out of shame, out of confusion. Even those, if you can try to understand the causes and conditions that would make someone do that, the key is just understanding. Once there's understanding, it's like, oh, as I said a couple of weeks ago, the beautiful teaching by Jesus, forgive them, they know not what they do. Once you understand, even if they don't, then you are more likely to not cause harm. Another reason for peace is avoidance of harmful repercussions. It says, the taking of life is a condition for having fear and animosity in the present and in the future. Taking life occurs together with mental pain and despair. In refraining from taking life, one neither produces fear and animosity in the present or in the future. Furthermore, one does not experience mental pain and despair when one refrains from taking life, fear and animosity are stilled. So you're doing this in this particular teaching. He's saying, just for the very basic not wanting to cause yourself fear and pain, just see the consequences of that, of those actions of harm, is fear and pain inside. If you don't want that, if for no other reason, not trying to be a saint or somebody holy, but if you just don't want to cause suffering inside, then develop that spirit of harmlessness. Mm. If desiring happiness, you use violence on others desiring happiness, then you won't find happiness after death. That is, beyond this lifetime, you will be reaping karmic results of your unskillful action. If desiring happiness, you use violence on others desiring happiness, then you won't find happiness after death. It reminds me when I was a school teacher, I mentioned before, I was a school teacher for a number of years, mostly in New York City. And at the beginning of the year, and in those days, forgive me if you've heard this before, I had long hair and a beard. This is in the late 60s, early 70s. And I played guitar, I still play guitar, and I was different from most all the other teachers in this very conservative neighborhood in Queens, Astoria, Queens. And I was the cool teacher, right? When they got, at least after my first few years, the first few years I had to kind of figure out what was going on, but I always had the guitar. And when they got into Mr. Barris's class, they thought, wow, we're going to have a good time. And I would say to them at the beginning, you probably heard, you know, that we can have a good year in this class. And we can have a good year. You can have a really good year if you just remember one rule. And if you don't remember this rule or you forget, it's not going to be as good a year as you think. They were very interested, yes. This is the one thing you've got to pay attention to, and we'll have a really good time. And I said, it's amazing, I hadn't seen this quote. I said, just make sure that your happiness is not coming from causing somebody else suffering. If you can respect each other and not have your happiness based on somebody else's suffering and pain, we'll do fine. We'll do really good. But if you forget that one, this is not going to be as good a year as you think. And it was kind of like the magic ingredient that that pretty much people got. And if they didn't, you know, it wasn't as good a year, but they would usually catch on. Isn't it strange that people get their own happiness from making other people miserable? It's a very limited happiness, isn't it? And yet, how prevalent it is in the world. And not just prevalent in the world, but in our own hearts. I'm sure everybody here knows the feeling of really wanting to stick it to somebody. Anybody not know that feeling? I know that feeling. And it's humbling to see, oh my goodness, that's where I look back on the things that I did when I either stick it to somebody or not care what they think, which is just another variation, to not care that somebody is going to be hurt. And when I look at my own heart these days and think of the things that I did so unconsciously, it's just, and then I think of how many in the world, how many of us in the world that's not a break. It's not, you're not putting the brake on your actions. And if you realize where happiness lies, you don't do that. And yet, it's easy to go unconscious. And it's easy to read the newspaper or your wherever you get your news and say, ooh, I... That's where humility comes in. Humility is really important in this process. The Buddha. Fear results from resorting to violence. Just look at how people quarrel and fight. But let me tell you now of the kind of dismay and terror that I have felt. And this is the Buddha. Seeing people struggling like fish, writhing in shallow water, with hate against one another, I became afraid. At one time, I had wanted to find some place where I could take shelter, but I never saw such a place. There is nothing in this world that is solid at base and nothing that is changeless. I had seen them all trapped in mutual conflict, and that is why I had felt so repelled. But then I noticed something buried deep in their hearts. It was, I could just make it out, a dart. That is a pain in their heart. Influenced by this dart, one runs in all directions. Having pulled the dart out, one neither runs nor sinks. I'll do just a few more and then... The power of loving kindness. Metta is called loving kindness because it is loving. It refers to tender or lubricating love. This is from the Visuddhimagga, so this is not the Buddha talking. This is Buddhaghosa. It is also known as metta because it arises in one's relationship to a friend, which is mitta. It's friendly. Characteristics of loving kindness is to promote well-being. Its function is to prefer well-being. Its manifestation is the removal of annoyance. Its proximate cause is seeing the loveliness of all of beings. It succeeds when it makes ill will subside. And here's the simile of the saw that I mentioned a few weeks ago. Monks, even if hoodlums were to cut off your limbs, if you become hateful toward them, you would not be carrying out my teachings. Rather, you should practice. Our hearts will remain unaffected. We will say nothing evil. We will maintain compassion for that person's well-being. We will maintain loving kindness and a heart free of hate. We shall practice suffusing the person with our heart filled with loving kindness. After doing so to this person, we will practice suffusing the entire world with our heart filled with immeasurable loving kindness. This is how you should practice. So I think I'll stop here. There's lots of reasons. I just stopped there, but there are a lot more quotes. The Buddha spoke about this a lot. But there are also reasons to be very fierce in this world and to have courage and to stay connected to that caring heart. And the trick is to be what is sometimes called a sacred warrior, or a warrior who comes from a place of loving kindness but has very strong action. And this is what we're called on in our practice, to be outraged, but go deeper than the outrage to the place of skillful action. Because as the Buddha says, hatred never ceases by hatred. Hatred only ceases by love. So what I wanted to do to finish this part before we explore together is something that is kind of unusual. I want to share with you who, for me, one of the most inspiring teachers of what is called the joyful responsibility that comes with sharing your practice. Sharing your practice in a very fierce way. And this is Julia Butterfly Hill, who I've mentioned here before, one of the most inspiring people for me, talking about this fierce compassion. She was, for those who don't know her, was up in the tree, the redwood tree, called Luna in 1998 for 2 years to help keep that tree and other redwoods from being cut down. And she was very fierce and loving in her commitment. And I have a couple of clips of hers that I'll play. And this is where I invited her to come to the Awakening Joy class a number of years ago in 2010. And want to play two clips. You just be able to hear them. You can see them, but I just want to have us all hear her words, and then we can explore and talk together.
I tell people, I'm not trying to tell people not to be angry. I feel if you're not angry at the world today, you're probably not awake. But it's, but for me, there's a shift that happens, which is, do I choose to do what I do out of my anger, my judgment, or do I choose to do what I do out of my love? Just like the tree takes in the toxins, breathes it in, transforms it into life and grows, I too could do the same thing. When I am present to my anger, I can choose to act out of anger and I'm probably going to make a mess. Or I can breathe that anger in. I can recognize that always what is underneath my anger is my care. I'm only angry because I care so much about my world that it breaks my heart that we're so good at destroying it and destroying one another. And I recognize, because I've done this work enough, that when I'm angry, what it's actually doing is it's a self-defense mechanism against this. Against the fact that I care so much about our world, and I see what's possible for us as a humanity, and I see how far we have to go. And it breaks my heart. But underneath my anger, underneath my rage, underneath my fear and my overwhelm is my care. And if I can get in touch with my care, then I can put love into action. Instead of anger into action or fear into action.
And this one is on fierce compassion.
The beautiful thing for me is that through love, I can transform my anger, my rage, my cynicism into what I call fierce compassion. But it doesn't lose its teeth. I got a little bit of an edge to me. I don't know if you've realized that tonight or not. I'm not sure. I have a little bit of an edge. And people ask me that a lot because some people are so attached to the anger is what sources them. They ask me, well, if I were to give up my anger, what would I do? Like, my anger is what gets me out of bed in the morning. I'm like, well, why is it that anger gets you out of bed? Why do you choose that instead of love? Like, it's actually just a choice. But in the space of choosing to transform through love, I don't lose the edge. I don't lose the fierceness of my passion. But fierce compassion gets the chainsaw of judgment out of the space. and gets me present to, every breath is a miracle. How do I want to live my life in a way that honors that miracle? Wow. I get goosebumps when I get present to that. That's such a more joyful way to live life. Joy. Awakening joy. Joy gets awakened every moment that I get judgment out of the space, get love in the space, and get myself in service to love. Because ultimately, my service to others is about bowing to the feet of love every day and saying, what would love have me think in this moment? What would love have me say in this moment? And what would love have me do in this moment? We may or may not win. We may or may not lose. Who knows? We don't have the crystal ball. But what I do know is every day that I wake up and choose to think, speak, and act in love, I won. And hopefully others win as a result.
And so she talks about the joyful responsibility that we have to express our caring. I love that phrase, joyful responsibility. Responsibility sounds kind of heavy, but joyful responsibility to really come from that place of aliveness and how much you care, then you're coming from peace and you can be very fierce at the same time. Sacred warrior, the peaceful warrior, we need as many peaceful warriors as we can get. And so I hope you see yourself and your practice as one of sacred warriorship. Not to let yourself give in to those such human responses of anger and hatred. Just staying in touch with your care that's underneath it all. So we can take some time to have an open conversation, anything that might be coming up from this topic or anything you want to bring up. Oh, thanks, Andrew.
On this topic, there's a man who's done a lot of work around this kind of thing from a different point of view. His name is Marshall Rosenberg. He teaches something called nonviolent communication. And people, of course, ask him, how do I deal with my anger and what do I, you know, how can I do it? And he has an interesting concept called the protective use of force, which is taking action in order to do something positive for the world. He talks about when a four-year-old is about to run out in the street with, you know, with cars going by, you don't spend a lot of time negotiating and explaining why it's not a good idea. Mm-hmm. You grab the little kid by the shoulder and you yank him back onto the sidewalk. But it's done out of a sense of caring for this person. It's done out of a sense of wanting to make the world a better place. And sometimes, as he said, you need to take real clear action. And just as you're talking about, just as the Buddha's talking about, it needs to come from a place of caring. It needs to come from a place of making the world a better place, saving that little kid's life.
Mm-hmm. The protective use of force.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. And the Buddha actually, he was from the warrior caste. He was the Kshatriya caste in India. He was from a warrior clan, and there's a lot of images that he has in his teachings about conquering. There's one: it better to conquer oneself than conquer 1,000 men on a battlefield 1,000 times. And there's another one of his teachings with clenched teeth and tongue pressed against the roof of the mouth, one should crush mind with mind, with a little bit of loving kindness in there, with a lot of loving kindness. But he has all of these images. You know, he wasn't a namby-pamby kind of guy, but to do it from the protective use of force, as he's saying, to really go for it and be determined. Yeah, thank you. Yes, you had your hand up.
Hi. I'm seeing kind of a dilemma between...
Real close.
I'm seeing a dilemma in my mind between having compassion for someone that may be acting out of their own suffering and injuring another person or hurting another person, and having love for yourself. And if those two things are present, to me it seems like the logical choice is you really cannot be in community with that person.
Mm.
But maybe somebody has a different take on that.
So if I understand you right, you're saying if you're around somebody who is hurtful, how can you both have compassion for them and take care of yourself if they're hurtful towards you? Is that,
yes,
that it? It's a very important question. Having compassion for them doesn't mean letting them do what they want. And if you're in their field and you can't stop them, then you've got to take care of yourself. As the Dalai Lama says, if you're around somebody who has a lot of negativity and you've done everything you can to try to touch their heart and the negativity still comes, that's the time to find the nearest exit. That you have to first include yourself in healthy boundaries and in what is proper and stop somebody who is doing something unskillful and sometimes can be very strongly stop them. The trick is, if you can, to stop them without hating them, but rather to understand the pain and confusion. Doesn't mean you condone the action. It just means if you can respond with a non-hating heart, but really take care of what's needed to be taken care of, including yourself. Yes, back there, Wendy.
Well, the quote from the Buddha, I think it was the Buddha, about there being a dart in people's hearts.
Yes.
Was a very powerful image for me.
Yeah.
I mean, I actually thought about Donald Trump and pictured him with a dart in his heart. And, you know, I actually did begin to feel some compassion. So I think, but I think that it's just something about an image like that that kind of cuts through all of our thinking about this, that, and the other thing can help us to see more clearly the pain that probably just about everybody is in.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you for that. That's very helpful.
Straight from the Buddha, yeah. And it is interesting now, just what you said, I just want to underscore. In a moment, just that image opened up your mind to another way of holding it. Isn't that interesting? You know, you can read the words, but it's more than just getting it conceptually. It's an images have power. The Buddha you know, talked a lot in metaphors, just like Jesus did too. Images have power, and just one little tweak of seeing another perspective, there can be just a glimpse of what it would be like. And once you have that glimpse, then you can't pretend you don't see it anymore. And so it's really wonderful that you could just even experience that. Oh, of course, just how painful to have a dart in your heart. You know, it's I was just going through this recently with somebody who sometimes is there's a difficulty there. And there was a moment we're seeing something. It was like there was I said to a friend, it was like a thorn was just removed. All it takes is a moment to see it another way. Yeah. Okay. One last thing, and then we should go. Andrew, right back there.
Hi, James. Thanks for your teaching.
Real close to you. Yeah, sorry.
Oh, sorry. So I can really understand and resonate with the dart and the pulling of the dart. I have a more, I guess it's not more, it's a personal situation. My daughter's partner is a DACA recipient.
Is a what?
A DACA recipient, a dreamer.
Oh, a DACA. Mm-hmm.
Yes, and so he and his sister and brother, his sister was 2 months old when she was brought here to the U.S., so they've never been back to Mexico, and their parents live in the shadows. And I'm frightened by a man who can have so much power over other people's lives and who can affect other people's lives so deeply. And even though I can find compassion for some of the reasons he may make these choices and decisions, it still is stunning to me, and I try to hold, how can I act with love in the same way that Julia Butterfly Hill did?
Yeah.
To try to counteract that.
Well, maybe love might be too strong a word. I try to go for compassionate understanding. You can't go beyond where you are. And when the Buddha talks about love and loving kindness and wishing for somebody's well-being, what I take from it is, if you wished for that person's true happiness, their true happiness is them seeing for themselves where true happiness lies. And if somebody has that dart out of their heart, they won't cause harm to others. So you might wish that person well, but well in a sense of a well-being inside that doesn't cause harm to others. But don't expect to be, or don't even imagine that you should love that person. But just starting with understanding is good enough. It reminds me, one of my teachers, Joseph's first teacher, Munindraji, who was also a teacher of mine, he was hearing a story, Sharon Salzberg, the wonderful meditation teacher, when she was, this is many, many years ago, and she was in Calcutta, where Munindraji was, and she went, she took a rickshaw, the human rickshaws in Calcutta, and as they were going through town, somebody, this guy, tried to jump and rob her. And she comes afterwards and comes to Munindraji and tells him about this situation, and luckily they got away. And Munindraji says, "Oh dear, when that man came after you, you should have taken your umbrella and with all the loving kindness in your heart, beat that man away. But with all the loving kindness in your heart, get away. If you can bring both of those together, then you're a peaceful warrior, a sacred warrior. Yeah. Okay, we should end. We'll end with the loving kindness. Okay, so just going inside, wishing yourself well. That's where it starts. And then extending out to everybody near you and out to all beings everywhere. Just as I want to be happy and free of fear and safe from harm, may all find happiness, freedom from fear, and safety. May all beings know inner peace and freedom from suffering. May all beings know the highest happiness. And may our coming here together be of benefit to all beings everywhere. So, thank you for your attention. Be well. Go out there and be sacred warriors. Fight the good fight with all the loving kindness in your heart. And see you in November.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.